mean it. I meant a current cost, and that is a longer argument. And I still come back a bit to deprival value, which I'd say is not necessarily a replacement cost. That's another argument that needs to be had. I mean, I think what you said was quite interesting, Stephen, on the narrative reporting and giving that sort of information. But what I come back to, I guess, is that one thing's for sure, historical cost isn't any use. So the reasons I would go for historical cost are cost-benefit or practicability reasons. But that's not going to give you a figure that over a period of time is going to be useful to you in even estimating the future cash flows. And you talk about a charge to the operating statement. Well, you can have a charge to the operating statement. In fact, you do on current cost as well, generally. It'll be a larger one, but probably a more realistic, well, depending where the market's going. So I guess for Wayne's question, I wouldn't be looking at different industries. I wouldn't be worrying about whether they're operating or investing. I just current cost them.
To the example and Stephen's point, I just thought the opposite. You said, if I understood it correctly, with regard to performance and fair value, you would have had troubles. If I would have been David, let's assume all have the same cost, but they have different prices because they are in different locations, and the more expensive locations have the higher prices. So with regard to performance, I would force them to do fair value, though that I can estimate the return of each entity and make them comparable.
Any other points that anyone wants to raise in this issue? Hubert?
I feel that in all this discussion there is a presumption that cost is very simple to do and value difficult to do. I'm not sure that's true. We are used to cost, but cost accounting may be terribly difficult. Getting to a cost number is not so easy as people think. And I feel that it has not been said, but I feel like it, as people, when they think of cost-benefit, think the simple thing is doing cost, the difficult thing is doing value. I think we have to think about that.
I ask a question, a clarification question for Catherine. You said management base should be flexible. That means, if I understand correctly, you said based on the management business model, there should be some flexibility for the entity to choose the measurement basis. And what the standard setter should do is to limit the number of the choices which entity can choose as a business model. That is what you would like to say. But, and my thinking is that is eventually based on a management would like to do. That means a management-based sort of management intent-based accounting you're heading for?
Well, I think we're bound down to this issue about what do we mean by management intent. I don't actually particularly mean management intent. I mean, what are they actually doing? And what is the business model that they've got that's allowing them to actually, that they're using to run their business? So in other words, and again, this is partly, again, from the performance reporting project, that where their model counts certain assets towards what they would consider to be operations, that they should be allowed to include those assets in that category and to value them and report the gains and losses arising from them in a certain way. Whereas another business that has similar assets but is using them in a different way within their model should have the capacity to reflect that model again in their accounts. But again, that's on the basis of full disclosure, so that everybody understands that they're looking at these different things, and maybe a requirement for more disclosure to help people appreciate how they might get to comparability if they wanted to with those assets. But it's trying to allow a sufficient leeway for the people who are running the business to feel that when they've put out a set of accounts that actually is explaining to people how they're actually running their business. That just in a very broad sense.
means the question answer to the Wayne's question is you don't care about the difference. Say retailer should stick to the sort of the cost model and plus maybe some disclosure about fair value, but not necessary to apply the same accounting for retailer or the some real estate industry. That is what you have.
Yes.
Maybe to add to that, and I fully agree with Catherine, but also maybe to add what Stephen said before. It's again, I think, about communication. And if I am a retailer, I have to, and we're not dealing with knowledgeable or those knowledgeable analysts about accounting. We have usually at those discussions here because we have real life analysts and real life investors we have to communicate to. And if I am a retailer, then they want to see a bottom line saying what did I earn with my retail business and not some market value fluctuations in my investment property. So I'm perfectly happy with saying I have a net income number with telling you what I made out of my retail business and a different segment or disclosure saying what is the actual value of my investment property. But I think it's, you cannot assume, and I think that's also why analysts are grouped among industries, because not every analyst can analyze every company, but they have to have industry-specific knowledge. And that's also, it's not doing everything through fair value and making lives of analysts easier. I don't think that will happen.
Could I just ask you on Stephen's suggestion that if you mark the retail properties to their value, and let's say we took those changes in value out of the operations of the retail stores, you were saying, what about Stephen's idea that you should still make a charge across from however you showed the fair value changes, the fact that you've now got a store which is maybe twice the price you paid for it, should you have a sort of double depreciation compared to someone who held it at cost, or should everybody be at some value and therefore everyone has this higher depreciation, assuming the price went up, of course?
I think it's an interesting idea. However, I think it's difficult to determine the amount, and because if you don't have a market, so to say, market value for the depreciation or the rent you have to pay, then it's very difficult to determine. But I haven't thought about that before, so that's my first guess.
We hadn't either.
Me too, but let me add some thoughts about that. I believe it's not the point of time to argue with other participants whether they are right or wrong or whatsoever. I just have a different view. And I'm coming really from the basic concept. Why to separate this portfolio, and you use the term, Bernd used the term investment properties. Investment properties already assumed that it's basically for sale. So My example was differently. As I understood it, it's just used for the retail, and no one has intention to sell it or do something differently. That was, my model. If the company decides that they consider to sell it, etc., I would agree. I believe disclosure about that, what it means, was important. But actually, I'm very hesitating in coming to your question about opportunity cost. I'm not quite sure what this figure really means. I would expect that if a company decides, or this retail company decides to sell the properties, then I would expect disclosures about would they rent it back, or what obviously they need to rent it back in some sense, or lease it back. What does it mean for their performance then? And generally, I would expect that, again, there is a relationship between the sale price and leasing or rent or whatsoever. So the implications of such a sale, that's what I would like to see, and not, to me, fictitious opportunity costs on any fair value where actually the transaction does not take place. That would be my view on that.
To answer to that, I would say that the real estate comparison is still good because real estate is not only for sale, it may also be for rent. Our standard says to sell or rent. And you may well consider that, in fact, for your internal purposes and your intersegmental analysis, the real estate part of the business is renting that to the retail part of the business. So it works.
Yeah, I just wanted to come back to a comment that Gilbert made a bit earlier, actually, where he began to talk about that we assume that cost is a really easy number to come up with and fair value is really difficult. And I think that begins to move as well into concepts of understandability. And the initial thinking that we've been having in this area is, there's always an assumption that cost is understandable, but actually with complex allocations and so on, that's not always the case. And then you get to the question as to whether fair value is actually understandable. And I think, a lot of people would say, well, the fair value of a pig, for instance, is probably easier to understand than the cost of that pig. But on the other hand, if you get into a stock option on an unlisted equity, then the fair value of that arguably is less understandable. And I suppose the question, the thing that I think needs to be addressed is, in that context, what does understandability mean? So if a user of financial statements is trying to understand what the fair value of that stock option means, is it enough that he knows that it means the same as the fair value of a pig? Or does he actually need to understand all the modeling that's gone into coming up with that number in order for that to be understandable?
Any other points anyone wants to make? Tatsu?
Can I also ask a clarifying question to the bond of initiative? So you said your notion of the entity-specific value, but say you, also you support the held-to-maturity criteria should be held because the management might have such kind of intention, if I understand correctly. So my question is that your entity-specific value, it means management have a right to choose which measurement basis on certain asset and certain liabilities in order to achieve what you have in mind. This is the entity value. That notion is what you mean entity specific value. I'm not clear to that point.
No, I think to a certain degree that's correct. I think that management should choose what it uses a specific asset for within the business model. So, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
That means, Catherine's business model type of the selection, the difference is if we select this business model should apply, to measurement basis. But in your case, if management has some different ideas, management can choose other measurement basis for in order to achieve the entity specific value which management has in mind.
Yes, I would say so.
Can I just pick up on that point, because we're going to have an issue dealing with IAS 39, because everyone says it's far too complicated, you've got to do something about it. And one of the, just looking at how 39, which was obviously developed from the American standards, came in, I think everybody agrees if you're trading mark-to-market, take-to-income, I mean, that's been standard practice for years without the standard anyway. Then there was the held-to-maturity, so it doesn't matter, I'm going to hold this for 20 years, so why does it matter if the price varies in the meantime? And then, of course, you get the cynicism coming in by saying, well, if they're short of profits in year 12, they'll just sell some of these things that held to maturity if there's a gain on them. And so in comes the rules to say, now, if you do that, then we're going to make you mark everything to market and take it to income. So then there's an outcry saying that that's too draconian. So income's available for sale. Okay, you mark to market, but you don't take to income until you sell it. And then we have to have the rules of chopping them all up. And one of the issues is going to be, you know, can we cut this to two categories as opposed to three? Can we simplify it in some way? Now, how are we going to handle that one, you think, Bernd? Yeah, we don't know what the answer is. I'm just sort of throwing it out to see if you have it or anybody has it. Answers on a postcard, but preferably in the next 5 minutes. Yeah.
Well, you also got the available for sale category to get rid of.
Which one do we get rid of? Trading. That's the one everyone likes. So do we get rid of one of the other two? Can we? If so, which one? If not, don't complain about complexity.
That depends on the measurement attribute you will be preferring at the end of the day. I mean, if you are going for a fair value, then what's the use of holding an instrument to maturity in that classification? At present, the argument is that anyway, you don't need to know what's the current price for it, and because I'm going to hold it for maturity. Because if we are turning into full fair value measurement attributes, or to be for all assets, then that would eliminate easily the held to maturity.
Should we though? Because we haven't decided to have a fair value attribute for all assets. It's just which one should we have? Jochen, what's your answer?
Your question is, in a sense, I don't know how to say so. I could argue on saying, if that's the only reason why we're discussing that, to get just one measurement, we would have the most simple model. So let's decide, and then maybe we make a vote now, and maybe we come to the conclusion it's historical cost, and then we're going out and saying we have a simpler model now.
That could be. I don't think that'd be very popular either. It's the problem with this game. You can't expect a salary and a round of applause. You know, it's the... So that was very helpful, Jochen. That's Catherine's got the answer.
I wouldn't like to say I've got the answer, but I do think there is an issue about the ability of the users of financial statements to assess the different gains and losses that are being put in front of them. If you have different categories of asset, financial asset, but there's a worry that things that are being called held to maturity won't in fact be held to maturity and that they'll actually be sold to increase earnings in a short period, for example, then there is an element of subterfuge in there, surely, because otherwise the people who are using that information are not are just going to see the gains and losses lumped together and they won't realise that that's happened. But we do know that the market does criticise and does mark down companies that try to explain things in one way when actually the market perceives them in another. So, for example, where a company will describe a gain as not being exceptional, but the market takes it as an exceptional one-off one and will not mark it in the same way as its other earnings. And similarly, where they'll describe a loss as exceptional and the market will not mark them, will mark them down because actually they don't think it's a particularly exceptional one-off item and they think it's likely to arise again in future. So there's an element there of if somebody says it's available for sale and then it's not available for sale, it's held to maturity and then they sell it, well, there has to be somebody at the other end of the receiving end of that information that either can't see the difference between those two things, the things that were always called trading and the things that were held to maturity, oh, and look, now you've sold one. And, either they're just not being, shown it because they've just all been mixed up together, in which case an element of subterfuge in management. Or they do see them separately, but don't mind one way or the other. They're just treating them in the same way anyway. So I'm not sure that it's as straightforward as we end up with all these different rules because of that. I mean, I think that there's a, if there was a real difference between those gains and losses, then people should be able to see it and assess accordingly. As I'm not making myself terribly clear, but that's just...
You've been working for a lawyer too long. That's the problem, Catherine. Yes, yes, tell him that. So which one do you get rid of then? Or
you could presumably have a business model where you can get rid of all of them. I mean, you just don't have separate classes of the financial instruments. I can imagine a situation where that might apply in practice. There might also be an argument that says, from a standard setter's point of view, because of the overall complexity of financial instruments, there is a decision that all financial instruments should be done on the same measurement basis, and that the way that you cut it to deal with different business models has to be done in a different way. That might be another way around it, because you can't actually differentiate between these different categories, or it's just too hard for users to understand the different ways that businesses might do it. So I'm pragmatic about it. I would, if necessary, say, you know, it's not going to work for financial instruments. We can't have these different baskets for them. You're going to have them all held at fair value if in the end that's going to be better than having a raft of complex rules.
I think I was going to say some of the same as what Catherine's just said, but to your point on help to maturity, wouldn't it help if we moved to a business model rather than a just what do you think on day one on an individual asset by asset basis? So, you know, you could easily do away with held to maturity as a kind of one time choice for each bond or whatever on the day you buy it, if you're in a business model which would allow a bank, for example, to say, well, if my business model is it's a loan portfolio, it's a held to maturity asset, and maybe I need to be, you know, within that business model, I need to be in a fair value through equity type model, or I need to be in a historical cost model. I don't know where you end up, but at least moving towards a business model approach gets you away from that kind of arbitrary designation on day one.
I'm just intrigued by this different measurement for operating versus investing, the business model approach. I think a lot of the conversation we've had so far focused, at least my interpretation of it, talked a lot about assets. And I'm wondering whether, are there any operating liabilities? And if so, are they short-term, or can any long-term liabilities be operating liabilities? And if they're not, and then we have a different measurement attribute for some assets that are labeled as operating liabilities, or at least long-term liabilities are on a different measurement attribute, does that mean that we're going to need to develop some new notion of hedge accounting, or do we just, entities are happy to live with whatever economic mismatch there ends up being not correctly portrayed in the financial statements because we have these two different measurement methods? I just didn't quite understand the implications for putting this all together.
Mary, I'm unable to respond in a sense how to cope with any mismatch, etc. But let me just look at the balance sheet positions as individual items. And I do not believe that you always have a distinction between operational financial, because you can argue that generally in most cases you have cash outflows. But you also might have liabilities which do not result in cash outflows, but you return an asset, for example, real estate or something like that. I'm more concerned, and that's what I believe my input would be to the board, is here in a sense, if you have a fair value notion, and in particular if you have an exit notion, that you have so many liabilities where you don't find someone, the party that you can settle, or you can transfer it. It is just really that it's the nature of the transaction, it's the nature of the debt, of the liability, that you pay it back, so you have cash outflows in a sense, but you don't transfer it, you don't settle it at that point of time. And maybe some people also misunderstand what settlement means. I believe some means, yes, paying off over the maturity, and some understand, as I understand, is a notion by the FSB, settlement means settlement at the balance sheet date. And I'm very much concerned about that, also including the own credit risk again. But I believe it's just not reality. If you look, for example, nuclear decommissioning provisions, will you find someone to settle at the balance sheet date? I don't know what it would really mean, this kind. Also, we had already discussion on that. Warranty, where you have the repair of the car, something is wrong, etc., and the manufacturer has to replace it. Do you fair value this one, or would you just take the cost of the manufacturer? So these are my concerns, and I believe these are special to liabilities. So I would look at it differently when compared to assets.
Okay, I think we're going to have to call this to a close. I may say the board does not have the answers to these questions, and you're equally hopeless. We didn't find it here either. We can't really obviously sum up this. I got a distinct impression you certainly wanted to reduce dramatically the number of values and costs that Kevin came up with in his list. I think there were some interesting points about what do we do about operational assets. Do some go at value? Does it matter if they stay at cost? There was a question of should we show the current values of these sort of retail items if we're going to do that and charge across, or do we just show the historical cost aspects? Financial instruments, the point I think Stephen mentioned about all investments should be at value anyway. I don't think there was necessarily unanimity on that point either, and we have, of course, got to do something on that area in the next year. We will be putting out a discussion paper with, I should imagine, not just one proposal, but you know, here's various ways we could try and simplify 39. So the issues do run right through just about everything we're doing. We certainly haven't got any final answers, and I don't think many of you are advocating full fair value for everything, and I don't think many of you are advocating historical costs for everything either. Another issue that's obviously popping up is performance reporting is going to come into this quite a bit, especially if there are more values. It's how you show them within that statement, how you possibly segregate them is going to be very important too. This was very helpful. This is the first, I think, of many of these sort of discussions. We're just at the beginning of this issue, and it's obviously very controversial, and it's very difficult to come up with an answer that not everybody would agree with. That's almost impossible, but at least finding where the consensus lies. We have this mixed system. We're going to try and see what we can do about it to simplify it, but as we've discovered this afternoon, it's not going to be that easy. Well, thank you very much for coming. We've taken quite a lot of notes here, which Kevin and the rest of us will absorb into our conceptual framework project, and then you'll come back to you with stage two, I expect. Thanks very much for taking the time to come. We very much appreciate it.